At AngiesList.com/Amber, you can find thousands of unbiased ratings on services for your home improvements, car repairs, and even doctors. When you use promo code AMBER, you will save 25% off your subscription. It used to be difficult to find service providers you can trust, but not anymore thanks to AngiesList.com/Amber. So visit AngiesList.com/Amber today and save time and money.
It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do it right. Amber May Show is here with topics you like out in the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
Welcome back to the Amber May Show. I'm so happy you joined me. And we have a great guest, none other than Cynthia Hyatt. She is a psychotherapist, but she's also a minister. And that's why I wanted to have her come onto the program today so she could talk about both sides, the spiritual side, but the psychological side. And the topic today is divorce. It's hit so many people around the world, and I think it's a topic that we need to cover. And Cynthia Hyatt not only is a therapist, but she too has discovered the pains of divorce. So she can speak not only from a psychological standpoint, a ministry standpoint, but also a personal standpoint. And I thought that's why it was super important to have her join us today. Thank you for coming and joining us today on the program.
Thank you for asking. I'm always glad to be here.
Yeah, I love your wisdom. I love your insight. I'm glad I met you. And I think I'm going to have you on more and more and more. But
well, that would be great.
I want to talk to you about, I guess the first thing we could talk about is what it's like when you're going through divorce. I hear it's like some of the stages of mourning that you go through. And for those of us who have never been divorced, or maybe some people who have never experienced divorce, what would it be like, and how can we be a good friend to people that we know in our life that is going through that, or if they're experiencing themselves, how can they reach out and tell people this is helpful to me?
Well, you asked me quite a few questions all in one, and those are big questions. I think trying to understand what somebody's going through if you've never been through it is always difficult. And so the easiest way is if we think about an analogy. I mean, everybody has broken up with a boyfriend or girlfriend. Everybody has lost a pet, you know. Everybody has had maybe a handbag or something that is a value stolen from them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about all of those kinds of dynamics and put them all together and then amplify it by times 10, that's what divorce is like. Because divorce is a loss and a tearing away and a death and a failure in so many areas on so many levels. And so it affects not only your identity socially, but it can affect your identity psychologically. It can affect your identity professionally, your identity as a parent, as someone that's not a parent. It affects how you feel about your ability to love and to be loved. And so it rearranges everything on every level. It's very difficult to keep anything normal when you're going through a divorce.
Wow, that makes sense.
And the other thing that we find, you know, and I try to explain this to Christians or anybody that's been married in a church or by a minister in the name of God, even mm-hmm. if they may not be practicing Christians. You know, God takes marriage very seriously.
Right.
It doesn't mean that as Christians we're to make marriage an idol, and we kind of do sometimes. We mm-hmm. kind of think that's the arrival point, even though the Apostle Paul wasn't married and told us that being married wasn't the end all of end all. In
right.
fact, being single, we can do a lot more for God. But we as American Christians revere marriage to a degree sometimes that is unhealthy. And I always am saying to Christians, you know, there's no marriage in heaven.
That's right.
There's no children. There's mm-hmm. no parents. This is a, you know, concrete, earthly dynamic that is intended to give us a spiritual understanding of what heaven will be like for us. So it's an important part of bonding together community and bonding together the body of Christ. And marriage is the most profound relationship that teaches us about who we are.
Yep.
And so when people are going through a divorce, many times I will say to them, well, if the marriage won't kill you, the divorce may.
Hmm.
Because it is that painful, that difficult. There is not a divorce that is easy. And if it is easy for somebody, then they've never attached. And so when you marry under the name of God, you have to remember that God joins it. He's a part of it. And trying to rip that apart is different than just two people breaking up. See, when you do that spiritually, even if you don't know you're actually doing that, It is a very big deal to God, because he's the one that said, I'm putting this together, I'm blessing it, I'm honoring it, and I'm going to hold it, help hold it together. So when it has to break apart, and many times it does, I mean, we know that God gave divorce to us through Moses. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Satan that gave us divorce.
That's right.
It was God, and he knew it was necessary. And that's heartbreaking for him, but it's more heartbreaking for people to die or not be who they're supposed to be, because they're staying in a relationship that's killing them.
Right.
And so it takes a lot of wisdom when you're figuring out whether or not you need to divorce or should divorce or could divorce or whatever that is. And then you have to understand that once you enter into that, if you've been married under the name of God, it is going to be very, very difficult.
I think that's why God says he hates divorce, because mm-hmm. he sees the pain that comes along with it.
That's right. He hates the fact that people can't be unified.
That's right.
Because his whole goal is relational unity.
That's true.
That's the whole point of Jesus. That's the whole... So he's always heartbroken when he sees it's not working.
And he knows, like you said, under Moses, he knew that we're imperfect people. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make decisions that aren't right. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that we would have to have a way to fix that mm-hmm. mistake that we made. Now, let's go to a circumstance like infidelity. Mm-hmm. Is it... Do you think... I mean... You might not know this answer, but would you think that it would be difficult for that person too, that who created that situation, the person who committed adultery, would it hurt too when they get divorced? Does that?
Oh, I think in some ways it can hurt worse, because it's their failure.
Ah.
You know, it's kind of like if you're the one driving the car that killed somebody, even if it were an accident. But let's say it was an accident. Let's say you were drinking and driving, and you had to wake up the next day and find out that you killed somebody, versus the family that's grieving over the loss of the person that was killed. So both are tremendously painful, but they're painful in different ways. And so when you are unfaithful to somebody and it ends up causing the marriage to fail, that's like a double failure. You know, it's not only was I not able to stay married, but I actually... killed the thing, per se. Now, we have lots of marriages that heal from infidelity, and I will tell you the truth. Infidelity is not one of the major things that causes people to divorce. There are so many people that overcome infidelity.
Interesting.
What causes people to divorce is selfishness. And that is the biggest deal, is the day-to-day selfishness of I want what I want, and I want it the way I want it, and I'm going to have any feeling I want to have whenever I want to feel it, and you're just going to have to deal with it.
That's interesting.
And so it's the immaturity and the selfishness of people that are in a relationship thinking that now that I'm in a secure relationship, I can act however I want, which is what a 3-year-old does, basically, right? And then they have really big feelings and they throw temper tantrums and they you know, vomit their feelings all over everybody. And then when they're over it, they're surprised that everybody else isn't happy with them.
I didn't think of that analogy. That's interesting. I like that.
And so when I'm dealing with marriages, and I have to tell you the truth, I've been doing this for 22 years, and the last 8 years of my practice have been very disturbing, because the level of confrontation that I have to do in between couples is astounding.
Because they're yelling and screaming at each other?
They're not necessarily yelling and screaming all the time. They're just out of control in their behavior. Their expectations of each other, that they really... are thinking that the other person is there to make their life happy and make their life work. And so if the other person isn't doing what they want and they're not feeling good, then it's their fault, and they're going to be mad and pout and sulk and give themselves justification and rationalization for saying and doing all kinds of things because you hurt my feelings. And so instead of having mature adults that are saying, you know, I'm in this marriage to make your life better. I really am. I mean, I really want your life to work, because I've already been making my life work.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have a partner that's doing the same thing, that's a simple marriage.
That's how I view marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what adult people do. But when we have immature people or selfish people that are marrying, then it's like marrying a child. And you know how difficult children can be. And they can be wonderful, and they can be engaging, and they can be fun. But when we have adults that are acting like children, that are not monitoring their own feelings, that are not checking their own behaviors, that are not watching their tone of voice and their body language and the gestures and what they think their rights are, And simply using that other person as a way to just get out whatever it is that's going on with them, or take their feelings out on somebody and think that you should just be able to have compassion all the time for me, and sympathy and support all the time for me, instead of saying, I wonder what kind of day this person has had. So mine might have been really, really bad, but theirs could have been worse. And so I'm not here to use them as my parent.
Yeah.
I'm here as a partner with them. I need to be doing my own life and doing it well.
And trying to do what would help them out with their life.
That's exactly right. Because if we're both doing that for one another, we double, triple, and quadruple our portion.
That's right. Yeah.
But when I'm in a position of, what are you doing for me? And how dare you act that way? And how dare you look at me that way? And how dare you, require that of me when I've had the day that I have had? And I can't get over myself. And then we have arguments that start out over something very simple. And 8 hours later, they're still going, and they have morphed into something that nobody even knows where it even started to begin with. And so when I'm talking to couples, many times I will say to them, you either have a truly an issue argument, or you have an emotional argument. And an issue argument is between two adults that say, you know what, you and I agreed that we were not going to spend more than $100 unless we talk to one another. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's an issue.
Yeah.
An emotional argument is, I come home, you didn't say hi to me correctly, I now have an attitude. And then you see that I have an attitude, and so you react to my attitude, and so now you're huffing and puffing around the kitchen and closing, cabinets loudly. And I'm saying, well, what's wrong, honey? Nothing. Nothing. Well, I know something's wrong. We have no idea. There's never even been an issue to begin with. It's just simply everyone's have an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then they think they have a right to act and say whatever they want to say. And we have this shameless society that nobody's checking themselves. So that's the biggest thing that's breaking up many marriages today. Because infidelity, unless it is truly a pathological condition, which is somebody that has a sex addiction, or is a pathological liar, is someone that is truly selfish and narcissistic and sociopathic in some ways, those things can still heal. Those are much more difficult. But many times infidelity has a lot to do with, my life is not working, their life isn't working, our life together is not working, and I made a really bad choice. And I got caught in a vulnerable position, and I was an idiot. And now I'm stuck. Or the second type of infidelity is, I shouldn't have been in this marriage to begin with, and I should have been a grown-up and ended it when I needed to, knowing that I'm getting myself vulnerable because I don't want to be with this person. And if I would have taken responsibility for it and said, you know what, this marriage has to end so that I can then go and do my life the way I need to.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I just don't want to face the fact that the marriage is over. Then I become then I become vulnerable. Then I become unfaithful. And then I really do want a divorce because I want to be with the person that I've been unfaithful with.
Well, I sure hope this has been helpful to the listening audience, because I think it's a good topic that we talk about, because I don't hear that many people talking about the different stages of divorce and what causes divorce and how we can heal from divorce. And I think it's important because it happens every day. I think every one of us knows someone who's been divorced, and I think it's just good information to have. I want to always thank Cynthia for joining us on the Amber May Show. I just love you to death, and I love your wisdom and your insight. So thank you so much for being a part of the show. Well, remember, instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two will look out for you.